Help us keep the shows flowing to your ears. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com, click on the Support Our Work tab, and show us a little bit of love. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. This is Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me is Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And on the phone, we've got a special guest. This is the, I'll introduce him first, and I'll tell you why he's here. We have David Kahn!
I've never heard that.
I'm sure he's never heard
he's
it.
He's never heard that.
But the thing is, we're recording. I think this is the 50th anniversary of when Star Trek started. So
yes.
That's the only reason we have David on, because of his last name.
To coincide with the anniversary.
We brought him on thinking there was going to be something else, but I just wanted to do that bit that wasn't funny and probably blew out somebody's earbuds. So, David is a world traveler, early learning dude. We like to talk to early learning dudes. There's not enough of them out there. So we'll get into the topic in a little bit. But so, David, my understanding is you started out in one of those hippie cities, Seattle or Portland or one of those, right?
Seattle.
A little bit less hippie than more upscale than Portland.
A little more Starbucks and Microsoft.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm just gonna say a little bit more hip. And then you were in Australia, and now you're in the UK, right?
Yeah.
So how's that happen?
Because I married up in life, and I'm married to a scientist.
You're married to a scientist?
I am. Yeah, it's ridiculous. She's an atmospheric scientist, and she's had a postdoc position in Melbourne, Australia, and now she's got a postdoc position here in Leeds in Northern England, and I just tag along.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I'm going to get me one of them.
Yeah, I recommend it.
So we recorded an episode a little bit back called Science is Rude, because science doesn't always agree with us, and science isn't always nice. Science is just science. Would your wife agree with that? We should probably interview her.
Absolutely.
that's awesome. And so you're just like are you like a kept man?
No, I'm a bit of a house husband, but I still got to work and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. It sounds like
opening a can of beer, like that kind of work.
A jar of pickles.
Well, he's got to have dinner ready for her when she comes home from the lab.
Some scones, maybe. Fresh scones and some.
Does she?
Yes, it's scones.
Yes.
Does she have a white lab coat?
No, she just is mostly in front of a computer all day. All the computer models that people use to predict the weather. There's a whole field of science where they just take real time data and make those computer models more accurate. So she's just coding all day long.
Oh wow!
Oh wow! So she doesn't have like a
computer
Frankenstein lab.
No, it's all about clouds. Her whole life is clouds.
Okay, well, we still like her.
Yeah, good.
were you working in early learning in Australia while you were there? Were you doing that in Seattle before you started the adventure, or how'd you end up doing this?
I left college with a useless degree, and I went back to Seattle to be with Jen, my wife, and I think, and just like probably 90% of the people who end up working in early learning, I said, "Oh, I like kids. I'll do this for a while. I find a job I want to do." And of course, I got I was in for a rude awakening, and I at the time, you didn't have to have any training, any certification, any real experience working with groups of children. You just had to pass the interview, and I did that in Seattle at a center that was in downtown Seattle, and it was very much the every time you talk about laminating ladies, Lisa, the pre-K teacher in there was probably like the queen laminating lady of Seattle.
Seattle laminate it crown.
Yeah. And I, in hindsight, probably learned a lot of things that I've been trying to unlearn and relearn the past few years.
Sure.
Yeah. And then, so when my wife got the job in Melbourne, I moved there, and I was lucky enough to, how to put this? I got a position at actually a very, very good center where I learned a lot. But the only reason I got it was, I remember a couple episodes ago, you talked about how amazing the things are in Australia, and they really are better for early learning. But the course I took an online course to have my certificate, mm-hmm. and I didn't have to interact with one child to get the certificate.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, when we were over there, I was seeing those commercials on TV, and yep. that kind of threw up some alarm bells.
Yeah, I think I was right on the, I think they've changed it, to be fair, and uh-huh. so I don't want to, like, say, like, yeah. it's all nonsense, but I think I was right on the cusp of that, and I literally took pictures of me doing activities with toy dolls. and so, honestly, like, I had just had to do it to get the piece of paper, uh-huh. and, yeah, I don't know. I just want to put that out there. That the having certificates isn't always necessarily the automatically a great thing. Yeah, like there's lots of ways to do it very badly. And anyways, I learned a lot in Melbourne. I was at did you visit Gowrie when you went to Melbourne?
Gowrie? I don't think so.
Okay. Well, it was a great place. I learned a lot, and I learned quite a bit, and it was I don't know how to put it. Great place. I learned a lot, and then I came to the UK, and I discovered your guys' podcast and the work of Magda Gerber, and definitely thumbs up for Magda Gerber, and probably the past 6 or 8 months, a job that I was honestly kind of ambivalent about, and I was kind of just in because I was in it. I've actually realized, oh, this is actually a job I can love, and it's very exciting, and I'm still kind of in the new convert stage of just realizing how much deeper this work can be. So it's been very exciting, but probably been annoying to some people as I try to talk about it.
As you get excited.
So, David, I'm going to ask you, how long now have you been working directly with kids?
8 years.
8 years and
almost nine.
Awesome. What does it look like with where you are right now? What age group, or is it a childcare center? Is it more of a pre-K kind of thing? What, paint us a picture of what you're currently doing.
Well, I just fled a place that I couldn't stand, thanks to your podcast. But I just got a job in a 2-year-old program set in a primary school, which is an elementary school here. Mm-hmm. And I haven't met any kids yet. They've had a whole week of training. I feel like I don't have a good answer for this. It's been very interesting. We had this one very scary woman come in and talk about how important handwriting is. And
for
that yesterday. But today we had this great training on the need for big movement, then how children learn through movement, and just very, very child. It was very child-centered stuff, and it was done and funded through the public school system, which just blew my mind. I'm excited to start. The kids start next week.
Well, that'll be great. I like dudes working with 2-year-olds. I think 2-year-olds are a great fit for dudes because they're just,
and vice versa.
They're just awesome.
Yeah. 2-year-olds. Yes. I can work with any age, but definitely 2-year-olds are. They're fun.
Yeah, their brains,
to say the least.
Brains are just lighting up and everything. So, in Melbourne, did you ever go to the Butterfly Club?
No, I feel like I missed out. I don't even know what that is.
Oh, man. We found that there was an improv night there, and I think we talked about it. It's like down this alley, and past the garbage bins, and you get down. It's dead end, and it's got Christmas lights, and it's really
very kitschy inside.
We posted a picture saying, if nobody ever sees us again, this is the last place we were seen. And we went in, and it's up the stairs and everything, and they've got just different rooms that are the bar, and they've got a little theater where they do an improv night, but they do other stuff there. It's just a really funky place, but that was fun. Melbourne, there's a lot of stuff to do in that city, man.
Yeah, Melbourne is extra trendy. Absolutely. That lots of alley places. Yeah,
a lot more going on there than maybe we didn't make it to Alice Springs because of the dead horse, but a lot more.
But that's another workshop, David.
A lot more hipsters, a lot more hipsters in Melbourne than Alice Springs, probably in your Australian experience.
Safe to say, yeah.
And so bring us into
I feel so left out, seeing as I'm the only one sitting here at this conversation that's never been to Australia.
Well, you should
soon, Lisa.
You should really see the continent. Lisa Murphy.
Oh, my.
You should get out much.
Get out more.
You are on your way to Japan in a few weeks.
I am.
Or actually,
yeah, life's hard.
You'll be back from Japan by the time people listen to this. So I hope you had a good time in Japan.
Oh, I'm sure that we'll be podcasting about my time in Japan.
So David, roll us into the topic you suggested online, because I saw you post something online. I said, come on the show. And
I know. I still can't believe I'm talking to all of you. I was listening to the Nikki.
We're still in our jammies. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, good. I don't know how to say her last name. Nikki Buchan?
Buchan.
Nikki Buchan, just how it sounds, looks. I was listening to her podcast talking about all the awesome outdoor programs that she is involved with and she consults for and the programs you saw. And I just... I just loved hearing about them and just thinking what's possible for working with kids and trying to help early learning people and just adults in general look at childhood as it can be something so much different if we look at it differently. And I entirely loved those episodes, but I think it was later that night I re-looked at one of the stories in the U.S. of a Head Start program in Prince George County, Maryland, threatening to get shut down because of just the outright abuse and I would even say torture that some of the teachers were doing. There's in the story, there was a kid who was forced to clean up his own urine and mop it up, and the teacher was taking pictures of it, and other children had to, as a punishment for playing during nap time, they had to hold a box of books over their head for a set amount of time.
What?
And yeah, it's just, I mean, absolutely atrocious, despicable behavior, and I just think the awful gap between these awesome outdoor programs and stories like that, which we always hear from time to time, just breaks my heart, and of course it breaks everybody's heart, and honestly, I don't know, I just, what's the responsibility of people in this field to address this? I really have no answers, and you've all seen a lot more programs than I have, but that's, I guess, why I am ranting to you right now.
Well, you know, that stuff...
Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I just Googled what you said.
Yes.
Holy crap. In the Winship Wheatley incident, a 3-year-old child was punished and humiliated after having a bathroom accident during nap time. The child was forced to mop up urine in front of classmates while still wearing wet clothes. Teacher took pictures on her cell phone, texted them to the child's parents saying, LOL, he worked that mop, though.
Oh.
T-H-O. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And there had to have been another teacher in the room, right?
Of course.
Who probably was thinking in her head, wow, that probably shouldn't be happening.
Or not.
Or not, right? I'm giving the benefit of the doubt here. Oh my gosh. If they failed holding the books over their heads, they were forced to start over, and cell phone pictures were taken and sent to the parents. What part of that in anybody allowed to be in this field's brain is registering that this is okay?
And this was a Head Start program?
Yep.
Okay. A Head Start program, yes.
Okay, well, let's pull this apart. One.
Well, yeah.
I think we understand that, you know, Head Start is supposed to be a shining lantern in the minds of a lot of people, because there's big government involved, and when you look at funding compared to what a lot of programs operate with out there and staff pay and those kind of things, Head Start's supposed to have their shit together in a lot. Well, Lisa, you're smirking at me, Lisa. But isn't that the vibe that gets put out there for a lot of people?
I think this is one of our sacred cows.
Well, you know what we like to do with sacred cows.
The best burgers.
Time to make a burger.
That was my impression. And And of course, I know of Head Start programs that do quite a good job, and of course they don't get put in the news that often.
Of course not.
That's a little side note, but yeah, just that this story, just the contrast between what Nikki was talking about and this story is just that.
Yeah, and I think I like the idea, you know, funding's good, it's paying people well, but the way Head Start goes about things, they are so checklist driven, and I mean, if you end up in a room doing a training with the people that work there, they'll tell you they won't tell you the same thing during a session, they'll tell you the same thing at lunch when their administrators aren't looking at them. Can you imagine a Head Start forest school?
No. You know what? It's kind of sad that we all laughed at that.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's my point.
Right.
And so I don't think, you know, we want to get quality early learning services to families that can't necessarily afford them. I mean, there are a lot of low-income, at-risk children out there in programs that are just atrocious. If you've got the finances in this country, you can probably find pretty decent childcare if you go hunting for it. And
if you know what you're looking for.
If you know what you're looking for. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we've got generations of families that have been stuck in subpar care, and that becomes cyclical, and you know it's hard to break that. I don't think government mandated this or that fixes any of it.
No.
I think one thing we know from the research, right, is that family income is related to school success.
Well, Kirk, yes.
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 And so one of the big things we want to do if we want to help children in those situations is create a thriving freaking economy where people have jobs and people have upward mobility and people have choices. And the last three administrations, at least, in the United States haven't been good at that. And so, I mean, looking at early learning policy, I guess I'm saying, isn't exactly the way we fix this problem. It's a bigger problem than just early learning programs.
Absolutely.
Well, I think this could go down the path of, you know, how lots of other countries provide what we would call childcare for people, that it's, you know, it's underwritten, it's funded, it's appropriate, it's free. And not saying that all of that stuff is going to automatically make something good, but what we offer for people who do need to go back into the workforce, we know is mediocre at best on average. At least I can speak about what's available in the United States.
Yeah. What have you seen in Australia and the UK as far as services serving those communities, David?
Well, I don't know the specifics, but I know in Australia and the UK there's a lot more subsidies in Australia, and mm-hmm. If anybody's in Australia is listening, they could probably comment somewhere and share the specifics. But in the UK, they at the very least they offer 15 hours of free childcare to two-year-olds for certain families, and people make use of it, but mm-hmm. it's not enough, but at least it's something, and trying to recognize that. One thing I did want to bring up was, I'm sure there's people listening, and I'm sure you've seen programs that, I don't want to like paint the picture that only the good programs are, only expensive programs are quality. I'm sure there's a lot of people doing very good work that doesn't break the bank for families. And maybe if anybody's listening, they should chime in later. But, and I'm sure you've visited some programs that aren't are affordable, but they still do a good job. And I'm sure you could say something about that.
Well, you can never say that just because something costs a lot of money that it's being done well.
We've
spent the last couple of weeks talking about, you know, the idea of quality and the things that indicate quality versus a checklist versus the stuff you can measure versus the stuff you can't measure and yada, 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 yada. So I think you're probably speaking to an audience that realizes that just because, you know, one of those boxes gets ticked off, not ticked off as an upset, but like checked off, that doesn't mean that the whole program, you know, in and of itself is going to be awesome. So yeah, I think you're good on that.
That other end of the spectrum, some of these highfalutin programs that are expensive end up becoming so academically focused because that's what they're selling to parents, because that's what that group of parents want to buy. They want to buy academic success, that those programs can end up being just as developmentally appropriate and bad for kids as things on the other end of the spectrum, I think.
That's what I worked at in Seattle. It was all lawyers and professional people's kids who, well, of course, loved their children, wanted the best for them, but they really pushed that. I remember talking with the preschool teacher. There was a lot of parents who really pushed worksheets and all this stuff, and she didn't want to do it, but she didn't feel like she could speak up at the time. Uh-huh. And there was just so many times that I just felt like we're a group of adults, we're a group of educators doing stuff we know is not right.
But this
is what we think the parents want, and they're just, I didn't know enough at the time to like speak up otherwise.
So I'm going to ask you a personal question. Yeah. Were there people on staff that did, but just maybe didn't have the balls to do anything?
Probably. I take some pride in the fact that after I started getting sick of making three-year-olds sit down to do table time, if I was left alone in the room, I would just let them play longer. I couldn't justify it at all. I didn't know any of the research, any of the background and stuff, but I just knew it felt wrong. And there was like, why are we here to make kids unhappy and ourselves unhappy? But
you're not, you didn't get the vibe that other people realized there were other ways of doing things, right? Because that's, and
no,
I'm only
no,
asking
no, the head preschool teacher, sorry to interrupt, the head preschool teacher, she agreed with me, but there wasn't a culture at the place where she felt like she could say anything or what she felt able to educate the parents. Mm-hmm. It was just like this is what the customer wants. This is what we have to do.
Right. So David, you're a young man of the world. How do we help create that culture where people feel not comfortable necessarily, but able to speak up and maybe make a ruckus or agitate a little bit a recent episode we were talking about when your job makes your tummy feel icky, you need to maybe speak up a little bit. How do we create cultures or offer support to people that are in those situations so that they can do that scary thing?
Well, honestly, I think what you've all started with this podcast is one way of doing it. Just saying the truth of the matter, and for whoever has found this podcast, that's one way for people to hear it. And it's inspired me to look at things differently and think about things differently. What I've been struggling with is I've probably had the obnoxious energy of a recent convert to all this like pro play and child centered ways of thinking, and I don't know. I've tried to talk to coworkers, but I probably didn't. I came on too strong, but I'm trying to learn how to not be so zealous about it. And I've been trying to learn to when talking with parents at the end of the day, just when they gripe about their 2-year-old being busy, just trying to personally and in a friendly way, just reassure them that your 2-year-old is doing exactly what they should be doing, and just trying to drop in little bits of education during those without being preachy. Mm-hmm. Is the thing I've been trying to work on.
Well, it's so challenging, and then back to the children that are, I mean, the Head Start thing, though, those kind of horrible things can happen in all kinds of programs, I think those programs with maybe more financial resources and a lot of parents working in the program, I think maybe it gets a little bit easier to keep it out of the news once in a while, or maybe shine a light on it if it's your kid that was being mistreated. But I think we see more of the stuff that happens in these programs that are serving more challenged populations a little bit more frequently, maybe. I mean, that's just my That's but a that gut thing.
Yeah, that's my assumption too.
And that could go back to the financial thing, right? I mean, as a federally funded program, that's your tax dollars that are keeping that. So there's probably more of a sense of everybody needs to know about this because in essence, it's everybody's program on some level.
Yeah, but I mean, it's hard to go to a community where, I mean, I spend a lot of time talking about burnout stuff, and it's hard to go to a community where there hasn't been a child shook to death in an early learning setting in 100 miles of where I'm speaking within the last 24 months. I mean, that kind of stuff just sadly happens. And I don't know where I'm going. It's just sad. I mean, it is just sad that we live in a world where that has to be a thing, but that is a thing. And I don't know exactly what we do about it.
I think just keep talking about it and realizing that we might not be able to generate a solution or an answer to this situation. However, maybe listening to the podcast and getting to know other people might empower somebody to stand up and say something about it the next time that they might be an earshot or eye shot of seeing something like this happen. You know, I don't want to get overly specific with what the opening example was with this Head Start in Maryland, but, you know, I wonder, like, well, you just wonder, like, is that bystander, right? Is like the bringing up the bullying and the person who sees it versus the person who says something, and how come the parents didn't say anything, or you know, could you imagine being on the receiving end of a text of watching your kid having being punished because, you know, I just don't even know, and maybe the texts were what, you know,
made it more social.
So, okay, you know, but yet what part of your brain says, let me punish you in this completely inappropriate manner and then take a picture and send it to your parents? And that is my segue into, Jeff, something that you said that maybe is a lot more brilliant than you realized.
Well,
you've been on a roll today. I've been keeping notes down over here. Is you said that you did not want to necessarily create a group of people in the profession who are comfortable with talking about stuff, but you wanted them to be able to talk about stuff. And that's not just a semantics difference. That's a big difference.
Well, yeah.
Because, right? Yeah. I don't have to over-explain this, right? I mean, nobody's probably comfortable jumping up when your throat is like, oh, my God, I got to say something. You know, comfort is not going to be anything that you assume is going to come apart, but you're able to.
Yeah, well, this last month, we've done a couple episodes that I've talked about stuff I wasn't comfortable with. But
you were able to. You had the language, you had the cognitive ability, you had the willingness, you had the understanding that this might be tricky and hard, but I'm willing and able to do it, which is different entirely. I think in too many instances, the people who are in the profession might lack the ability even. And that's obvious, again, not to throw this one particular example under the bus, but if that person was knowledgeable and trained in even the basic levels of early childhood education, one, that wouldn't be a punishment, and two, we would not be taking pictures of it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about pee for a little bit? I mean, we're coming up in half an hour, but can we talk about pee?
Pee?
Go for it.
This situation with the kid. This kid, 3 years old, I suppose 3 year old. We'll say 3 year old. 3 year old has an accident, pee on the floor, kid's wet. Can we turn this into a situation where that child helps with the cleanup but isn't embarrassed?
Because I want that.
I mean, I think there's a line there where, okay, get yourself cleaned up. Okay, help me with the mop bucket, help me with that kind of stuff, because it's kind of the responsibility, kind of that thing. So,
but this is shaming.
Exactly. I just want to make sure that we're clear that, you know, just because this kid was helping clean up his, I think at some point it becomes almost necessary that if you leave your discarded bodily fluids or solids someplace, you should be responsible for cleaning them up.
Well, and I will share a personal story with that.
Does this involve you peeing someplace?
Yeah, I peed someplace and somebody made me clean it up. No, I had a four-year-old, and people have heard the story on the road, and he just did not want to potty train. And finally, you know, this is a long story condensed for right now, but we realized that he was getting a lot of one-on-one attention from certain people when he was getting his diaper changed. And so once he kind of put this together, my first line of defense was, hey, here's the deal. You pooped your pants. Miss Lisa's right here. I'm going to help get you what you need, but you're the boss of cleaning yourself up. And it was really interesting to watch how quickly we were potty trained at Miss Lisa's house, but we weren't potty trained at home.
Yeah.
So, but during workshops, to your point, Mr. Jeff, I make it quite clear that it wasn't that you were like, okay, you know, here's a wipe, go take care of it. Like, I'm here, I'm in a supportive role, no shaming. But Miss Lisa's not doing this anymore.
Very different.
Yeah.
And that goes back. I mean, that's all built on that foundation of relationships we talk about so much and everything else.
Do you know that they lost $6.3 million in funding after that?
Huh.
And how many other kids is that going to affect? And how many decent Head Start teachers is that going to affect?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and even the kids put in that particular program, right?
I know.
Yeah. So although there might be some of us who go, you know, woo-woo, you know, you get what you get. But then at the same time, you got to still look at the fallout of what happens, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The collateral damage, as we say.
And again, it goes to something we talk about frequently is hiring warm bodies. And I can't imagine that the people that were making those choices were anything more than warm bodies in those programs.
It's sad.
And that's kind of a sad thing. Hey, David, you got anything on an up note to end the episode with?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. I would just encourage any other people who like this this podcast as much as me or have anything to say on this topic to like comment something on Facebook. I feel like it's such a huge topic that like we barely scratched the surface of it, and I almost wanted to back out of even talking with you guys because I really have no answers on this. I don't really have any expertise on this, but the value of this podcast and is getting views from other educators and everything else. So if this hopefully other people might want to chime in at least with some comments and keep a conversation going.
I'd
personally like to see that. So not all the listeners can come on the show, but maybe we can chat more on Facebook.
As we get older, as we go through more episodes, eventually everybody
will. We'll just go through the list.
Everybody will.
Alphabetical, how long you've been listening.
By the time we get done. And so where's Jenny the Scientist get sent next?
That's a good question. It all depends on where she can get, apply for a job. We'll see. We like England quite a bit, but it'd be nice to see our family again, of course.
How long does one get to milk a post-doc placement? Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
they're anywhere from 2 to 5 years.
In each place or in total after post-doc? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you could kind of do post-doc placements for the rest of your career.
I think she only does like, people in this field typically do 2, maybe 3 at the most.
I got a career change.
What are my job options?
Lisa Murphy leaves early learning to become a climate scientist.
I like clouds.
They're pretty.
Hey, look at that cloud. Hey, David, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad you
didn't back out. I got the email or the message, and you're kind of. I kind of felt your feet kind of taking your toes out of the pool as I pulled you back in.
I'm
glad you joined us, and all the kind words. We really appreciate that. And we don't just have people on who say nice stuff about us. I mean, but we sure like them too. No, it's nice, and it means a lot to us that you're listening over there, and that we have people, you know, outside the states listen to the show, and that we've started to get that kind of reach. It means a lot, and it's a fun thing for us to do, and we hope you all tune in for the next episode, which will be coming up in a couple days. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill. We'll be back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.